Okay, thank you. Good evening, everybody. This is the Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting for November 29th, 2018. It's a special meeting to deal with the issue of cloud seeding. And Andrea, call the roll, please.
Member Lee?
Here.
Member Hageman?
Here.
Chairman Gehring?
Here.
Member Gibson?
Here.
Vice Chair Barnidge?
Here.
And Member Guthrie?
Here.
Okay, thank you. And do we have any public comment from the audience on anything that's not on the agenda? About any of the board or committee members? Anybody? All right. So let's go on to action items then. Maybe we can make this a record meeting. 20 minutes is the record.
Oh, yeah. Who's counting?
Oh, thanks. I had it on my phone, but...
Excuse me. Action items. So we have Ray D'Enzo with County Public Works, and he'll be giving us a presentation on the potential cloud seeding program. Yeah.
Good evening, committee. I'm Ray D'Enzo from County Public Works. I'm pleased again to come before you and to describe the proposed cloud seeding program. As you, as we picked up from last week, the purpose of this meeting is to talk a little bit more about the details and some of the concerns that were raised from the previous meeting. I want to just do a short presentation, just kind of put everything in perspective. I also want to introduce to you all, I want to introduce Matthew Scrutato. He is from the County of Santa Barbara, and he's also available here to answer questions relating to the program that they've had in Santa Barbara since 1981, and he's currently the program manager for the cloud seeding program in Santa Barbara. So the focus of the cloud seeding program is to, in this case, target the Lopez watershed, even though the mitigated negative deck had both Salinas and Lopez were the target watersheds. So three things: program description, cross consideration, and the recommended actions. Simply, cloud seeding is, there's a seeding agent, in this case silver iodide is the most common seeding agent. And the seeding agent gets applied when a weather front comes. The idea is that it's not so much that the picture in people's minds of seeds, you know, seeding agent being applied to clouds, but it's more weather patterns that come. And the way weather patterns come, because the interaction of the seeding agent is right around 10,000 feet. So the seeding agent is brought up by this uplift if it's applied, or it's flown directly into the airplane into the front of the weather front. And then the seeded agent with the formation of the cloud droplets would go over and cause mass and then drop as rain. So typically, as you can see here, a storm front direction, the conditions are really ripe for cloud seeding because we have similar weather patterns that along the Central Coast, similar to Santa Barbara. Typically, it comes in from the northeast. So, as you can see, even the storms happening in the last couple of days have been coming in from this direction. So, and in this case, the target watersheds would be Lopez. This is just to give everyone some perspective what a ground-based seeding station looks like. As you can see, those there, it's kind of hard to see with the light, but it's a fair, what I wanted to communicate here is it's a fairly small platform. It's a footprint, I should say. And those flares there are the seeding, or where the seeding agents are, and it's lit because that's the only way silver iodide would become solvent. It's not solvent by liquid. It needs to be burned, and then the flares would essentially burn, and it would look like smoke, and then that smoke would be uplifted up into the weather pattern. Similarly, the same flares can be attached to aircrafts. As you can see here, this is how it would be attached right along the wing there. I was hoping that it was going to be, the door would open and I would throw seeds out of a bucket, but it's not that way. It's not that fun. No, it's just through flares, the same flares that are on the ground, but in this case, it would be lit and then it would be flown directly into the weather front. So, seeing that, as I said last week, Santa Barbara has been doing this program since 1981. Studies even before that were done in the early 70s. They did finally have a program starting in 1981. Some of the information that I shared showed some good results since then. Some trial runs that were done here, a couple of people here were here when it happened, where trial runs were done in the early 1990s for about 3 years. They saw about a 15% increase in rainfall during that time. Our master water report, the county's master water report from 2012, mentions cloud seeding as a potential supply option to be pursued by the county. And right around the time of 2016, your advisory board, you know, encouraged us, hey, can we pursue this as an option? Because, you know, we saw good results in the early 90s, and you mentioned it in your master water report. Perhaps we can see the feasibility of it. So hence, we pursued the feasibility study, partnered by the Zone 3 partners and the flood control district to commission a feasibility study. And it was completed in March 2017, and the results were favorable. We presented it at that right around that time later that year to your technical advisory committee, and they affirmed the results of the report and offered support to bring it before the board to move forward with the mitigated negative deck. Maybe I should skip all the way. So anyway, the mitigated negative deck was proposed to be presented to the board on June 19th, but there were still concerns that the board had. And so it was the item was pulled from the board. It was never voted upon. And the only way that we would bring it before the board again is if there was support, stronger support, particularly by the Zone 3 partners. And that's why we're here today. So these numbers are kind of rehearsed from the packet that you all have. Table A shows some just cost perspectives of how much it would be if there was a 9% increase, because that's the in the feasibility study on the low end, 9% increase was proposed, was estimated, and the amount of rain that would be estimated to go into the Lopez Reservoir would be close to 3,000 acre feet, as shown in that table. For a ground only, that would be $37 per acre foot. For air, that would be about $92 per acre foot, and a combination air and ground would be about 97 or 92 for the air and 97 for the combination air and ground. Table B shows on the higher end. The higher end was 17% increase in rainfall. That would bring about 5,500 acre feet to the Lopez Reservoir. And again, the costs there are in front of you, 20, 49, and 52. I'm highlighting the cost for the Lopez Reservoir because that's kind of what we're concerned about, how much water will actually go into the reservoir. There's also the benefits of the creeks and tributaries around the Lopez Reservoir that would also receive increased rain as a result of this program. And as we know, the increase in creeks and tributaries, there's a direct correlation to our groundwater levels. So there's going to be benefits in that. But as far as water going into the reservoir, I'm highlighting the numbers, in this case, 55, 27 acre feet, if 17% of rainfall were be increased by cloud seeding. So Again, this is also in your packet here. Startup costs for ground sites would be about $155,000. That, you know, site surveys, leases, all of that, and the actual fabrication, installing, testing of the actual units. In this case, I'm assuming four ground-based units. If we were only to do the Lopez Reservoir, we could probably even bring that down to two. Okay. And in the yearly costs, the annual program, it would be about $108,000. That's what Table 2 shows. Even though the costs are pretty good for that, I don't recommend that only because, for the time being, because aircraft would be an easier, quicker way to start up the program. And aircraft also wouldn't commit you to building any structures in this case. You know, you won't have to be committed to the structure that you built. In this case, if you wanted to try cloud seeding through an air program, you can do so. And if you didn't want to do it anymore, you can stop without any complication. But in this case, it would be a little bit more expensive. A five-month aircraft-only option would be about $268,000. Just to put it in perspective, the County of Santa Barbara, they don't have an aircraft-only, but the combination air and ground program that what they have was right around $298,000 was the latest cost for that from last year. And in this case, if it turns out like, you know, you wanted to do a combination ground and air, the estimate would be about $284,000. So the recommended actions today would be to support approval of the mitigated negative deck so that we could bring it before our board with a good recommendation from the Zone 3 partners. And also, if the board were to approve, that we also recommend as a staff that to pursue a cloud seeding program if, you know, pending County Board of Supervisors approval of the mitigated negative deck. So I know you all have questions, so I'm also available for that.
So, Ray, before we take questions, I was wondering, Matthew, did you have anything you wanted to add before the questions or no? I know you're not prepared to make a presentation.
Oh, okay,
thank you. So you can answer questions also. Okay, so who's up for a question? Jeff, you look like you're ready.
I'd be happy to ask questions. Thanks, Ray, for that presentation. A couple different questions for you. So if I'm hearing correctly, so if we did the ground only now, we wouldn't get any benefits until next rainy season at the earliest because there's a number of startup costs and so forth. So, and if that's the case, so, but you also mentioned that the table has four ground-mounted units, but only two of which would affect the Lopez.
Yes. Yeah, we could definitely, if we were to pursue a ground-only program, it would take time. It wouldn't be feasible till probably next year to do it.
And your recommendation is not for us to try and provide water to the Salinas Reservoir area, correct?
They'll probably get benefits too. But
I was going to say that they may get benefits, but if there's a significant correlation, there may need to be some partnership sharing of costs. I mean, obviously, the benefits to Lopez. Maybe that's a different question. How do we track benefits of this? There's 9% or 17%. What kind of reporting? Do we look at it and say we got 15 inches of rain this year and we got 18 inches of rain next year? How do we see the cost benefit ratio of this?
Yeah, it would be. So the way it would, we can probably most likely track it, and you know, granted, we can't do an experiment where there's an identical storm that comes follows, but there are really good forecasts nowadays. Like we have pretty good weather forecasting that say would estimate. You know, we go by models, say it estimated 2.4 inches of rain were to come in, and say we got 2.6 or something like that. That would be a reasonable way to track it. And also, a yearly thing, assuming that We were to get somewhat normal rain, you know, for the season. You know, if there was, you know, if we had say 20 inches normally that we would get, and we got like 22, that's also a good tracking method too.
So then the only other question that I've got for the moment is you've got the reservoir totals and then you've got the creeks and tributaries. And so the likelihood is that the creeks and tributaries assist in filling up the groundwater basin.
Yes.
And then once those are potentially full, then extra runoff runs off into the ocean. So,
yes.
So then does that then lead to who makes the decision when to cloud seed? And when we've tapped out what we've needed to for the season, and say we don't need to cloud seed anymore in this rainy season.
Yes, that's a good point. And this gets into what's called suspension criteria. And you know, Matthew has some really good information on that as well. But every cloud seeding program that's done is when the program is officially developed, there's also suspension criteria that's developed. And that's usually based on an obvious example. They've had burn scars, for example, so they weren't going to seed in those areas. And this year, or in the recent past, last year they seeded only Twitchell because of the burn scars that happened during that time. That's one example. Another example too is if the reservoir or the creek levels were already high. If the stage levels were high, then we wouldn't seed. If there was already a danger of flooding, you know, we wouldn't seed. Those are examples of criteria. And there's also a little possibility, too, that if for any reason the program manager says we don't want to seed, then, you know, there's authority to do that. So, yeah, it's not this automated thing where we're going to seed regardless. Yeah.
That's what I have for now.
Brad?
Thank you, Ray, for the presentation. Also, I wanted to thank you for sending along the three reports, environmental effects of silver iodide seeding that was done by SAC Municipal, and then there was a couple of other more weather, technical weather studies that I have to say I didn't read all the words. The letters were very small, but I did get through the abstracts, and I think that helped me to kind of answer some questions that I had from the last meeting. Just a thought on Jeff's, and maybe to restate, in terms of the effects, we don't really intend to try and measure whether cloud seeding was 9%, 10%, 16% on a per storm basis. We're just going to assume that based on past results and these studies, that cloud seeding increases the amount of rain from a given storm between 10 and 20%, or 9 and 17%, if you like. And it's my understanding that we're not going to make any attempts to try to quantify that. We're just going to go with those assumptions.
Yes, we would go with those assumptions. But as the question was asked last week about monitoring results that were done, and one of the information I sent you, that there was a study that was done, I believe over a 10-year period up to 2015, that went through a year-by-year, you know, measurement of the program, and you know, over that period, it did they did see favorable results, and you know, they only do them like over. That's why there wasn't a recent. You know, I couldn't tell you what happened last week or you know last year, but over those years, that they did see favorable results. That from
and
so the question is, yes, we're not going to be, oh, did we get our 9%?
Right.
You know, but there will be tracking done over a long period of time.
Yeah, and I think they had control. Yeah, Matthew, I think this was based on your data, and you tried to find control points. Coming up to the mic, if you would, please.
Well, in theory, to get a good statistical data set, you need about 20 years of seeded storms. And luckily, I think Santa Barbara, we have such an enormous data set. We actually started this program back. We started it. China Lake actually started studying this type of weather modification back in the late 60s. So there were two fairly in-depth studies prior to Santa Barbara working this program. So by using all of this data, there was quite a bit of information to work with, and that's how we came up with, our analysis to determine through quite a large data set that we're getting 20% increases at Kachuma and 9% at Twitchell. Now, you can somewhat correlate that to here. It's fairly same weather pattern, same area. I think we probably have more uplift directly around Kachuma. Therefore, that's why we're getting larger numbers. Mm-hmm. But I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is that we do have at least fairly local data that we can look at and kind of correlate to this area as well. What I wanted to add.
Okay, good. And I wanted to bring that out, your staff is basing their recommendation on these results and these studies, et cetera, and which I fully support, again, just from a standpoint of if we only got 5%, it's still a very cost-effective way to bring a little more water out of our storms. And then Jeff's point's well taken in terms of if the reservoir's full or if we have impending floods or downstream high rivers, somebody's going to say, let's not, or fires, as we've had in the past few years, you say, hey, we're not going to seed these storms or even this year. So, again, I'm fully supportive of moving forward with it, and I don't have any other questions at this point.
Okay. Thanks, Brad. And Shirley?
Yeah. Just one question. Thank you for the presentation. So if this is approved tonight by us and then is approved by the supervisors, what's the time period you would be starting and ending, just offhand? Do you have any idea?
Well, if it were approved tonight, we would target our board meeting on January 15th. And assuming that they would approve approving the negative deck, then we would move forward and seeing, you know, what kind of contract we could, you know, an RFP of some sort to go out. And if Santa Barbara already has some kind of contract going, maybe we can partner with them immediately. That's all kind of in flux at the moment, but it would be difficult to try to get it in this rainy season, but we'll surely try. So
we're kind of late starting. Is that how you would?
Yeah, I probably would have targeted next year, next mm-hmm. winter, to get the program started if it were approved. But we kind of did it like this because we thought we could, you know, there was still a chance to get it in this winter season.
So. Right. That's all all for my questions. I have a comment. Should I make that later?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. My only comment, I support approving this tonight. I think the ground platforms, though, would require a lot of commitment. And so I think this time I really support the aircraft only. Thank you.
Okay. Kristen?
Yep. Thank you. Thank you for that report, Ray. I appreciate you sending all the information, or Andrea sent the information on all the different reports. I found the Sacramento Utilities Division report, the environmental report, really easy to read and understand, and there's a lot of reiteration, so then if I missed something, it was later on in the report too. So I learned a lot, and I really appreciate the board giving us another week to look at all that, because I'm completely comfortable moving forward now after I've, you know, read all that information and learned everything I probably needed to know about silver iodide. The only question I have is, it seems like if this is something within how many years, if this is something we want to keep doing, would we think about the ground platforms? Because it seems like that's even, if it gets going, that's cheaper. And when I looked at the picture you put up, I pictured, because, you know, with the permitting and I pictured some huge area and some big, huge pieces of machinery, but that seemed really low impact. So what would you envision a couple years from now, if we're still doing it and we like it, we would kind of look at something more permanent for the ground?
Yes, I would certainly recommend that. If there was, part of it is the level of comfort, because there is a commitment. So if there was favorable results through the aircraft, I would surely think that it would be a good way to go. So, because it is cheaper in the long run, mm-hmm. if you were to commit through several years of it at least. So.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. And I'm ready to move forward this evening.
Okay. Thank you. Marcia?
Can you tell me why on the initial
study, it was including Paso Robles area, and they just declined to go forward? Is that?
No, actually, it was the Salinas Reservoir was okay. part of it. Yeah, so it was,
so, yeah. Well, okay, so they just decided not to go forward?
No, well, the board never actually heard the item because they had concerns, various concerns about it. I sent some information about some of those to address some of those concerns that the board had. But yeah, the original intent was to help both Lopez and Salinas watersheds.
But it's just coming to us, so I was just curious as why they weren't, you know, you didn't take it to them too. I'm just curious. It's not a
yeah. Well,
to my decision.
Part of it too is the city of San Luis would be the direct benefactor of the Salinas Reservoir getting more water, and in this point in time, they weren't interested in pursuing that for them.
Okay. So on the study you gave over the last, well, I think what it ended in 2015 with the water, the rainfall totals with Santa Barbara, I did pull up normal precipitation for those years, and they really correlated. You probably did increase your rainfall. I would not. 2011, there was a distinct difference between our average and yours. So it, you know, I think it did help somewhat, but it did correlate with the increased rainfall across the board. Everybody got 2010 was a big rain year for the most recent big rain year for all of us. But so I do think it you increased it by a couple inches because you know. Did you? Can I ask you another question here? So, do you take base samples in your soil and your streams and your waterways inside the area and then outside the area to talk about accumulation in the soil and waterways?
We don't do that. One of the reasons is I think there's been so many studies done to show that it does not bioaccumulate that the cost of doing that and the time to do that now, there wouldn't be a different result in our area as opposed to any other studied area.
Hmm.
So there are...
Because I read studies that show the difference. I think there's an equal amount of studies that show... I mean, I pulled up several, so that show that... And that, well, what they're saying is the technology to do the testing has come a long way the last 10 years, and that for more accurate...
You can get more accurate
part right,
per
readings,
billion,
yes.
per trillion values. That's
yes,
correct.
Yes, yes.
But so, it's still far below any EPA... recommendation or MCL on silver itself, and it's a hydrophobic, non-soluble substance,
right.
so it's
right.
it doesn't really break down. If anything, it stays within a soil particle, but it doesn't tend to accumulate. There's no bioaccumulation of the silver within the target zone.
So, if it was in the soil and crops were grown on the soil, would it intrude into the food?
It wouldn't be extracted from the silver itself is not, the silver iodide is one, I think there's, and I'm no chemist, but I think there's a difference between silver, which in and of itself is toxic, or silver iodide, which is a completely different substance altogether. Even to study silver, you have to break it down with nitric acid and hydrochloric acid to get a silver ratio. So,
right, right.
So the substance that we use is silver iodide. Mm-hmm. Not, it's
listed
not
on the CDC as a very dangerous substance, though, but I understand the breakdown of it. Doesn't it's not water soluble. Da, da. But when, okay, so the one thing I wasn't able to find, when it is activated with the heat, does it change the compound to make it a little bit more, and I'm going to use the word porous, but I know it's not that's not the correct term, but in my head, that's what I'm, you know, like it could absorb or break down in a different way than what you're expecting because of the heat. No?
No. And study results were done. They tend to rebuild. The flares that we use and tend to be used throughout the nation are studied in Colorado.
Yes, so, I read that study.
Okay, so there's some data on.
Yeah, and they're showing that there's no accumulation in the high solid state. Okay, let's see. Let me see if there's any more, because I'm really glad you came, because that was I had several questions regarding your territory there. So, nope, that's it.
Okay, thank you, Marcia. And Brian?
Well, Ray, thanks for the presentation. I apologize to you as well as the rest of the board for arriving in the middle of it. I guess my question is, you referenced, a system administrator or essentially somebody who is in charge of the program. Who's that?
In this case, there are a couple of staff people that would need, a meteorologist, a real meteorologist, to actually look at the weather patterns that are coming in. We would do something similar to what Santa Barbara does. We would contract an actual meteorologist, and then the program manager can be, people, like us that run the program, and we would have final say, just based on recommendations from the meteorologist, like this is the right time to seed and should we do it, and then yes or no kind of a thing, based on some of the data that we're looking at too.
Well, and I imagine that if there were a major storm event predicted where there could be significant flooding, you could make the decision to suspend the program under those circumstances. Is that typically what happens?
That's correct, yeah. Because if the meteorologist might not know situations that we know, there's a certain street that's already close to flooding, but it's not obvious, so we would definitely have the veto power into not seeding that particular storm.
And then, this may be a question more for Jim. I'm wondering if the program showed promise in the 90s, why didn't we continue on with this?
I don't remember, but I just know that we didn't for some reason.
I think because it started raining.
Yeah. You probably entered the wet cycle.
The lake was full, right?
Well, I'm supportive.
Okay. Thank you, Brian. So, Ray, I'm under the impression, let me back up for a second. As Brian mentioned, we did cloud seed in the 90s in partnership with Santa Barbara County. And my understanding is the reason that Santa Barbara County has so far shown no interest in partnering with us is that they may think that we could or might hold them up. But I'm wondering if we go forward, they might regain some interest in partnering with us and sharing some costs. Is there any thought to that possibility?
Yeah, actually, Matthew and I have talked about this, but that there are partnership possibilities by aircraft and also by ground sites as well, because there's some places that they also want to seed closer to Twitchell that would also benefit this area as well. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you for that. So, did that?
I have one other question.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask, Marcia.
Did the statistics show ground and air both, or just, it seems to me with everything I read, the air was really the most precise. You could get the, is that accurate? Okay, so, but you use both, right?
Yes, depending on the season.
Okay, so when is it optimal to use ground, or, when you said season, so ground is...
Thank you.
Thanks for coming, Matthew.
Right over here. I'm sorry. Our funding mechanism's probably going to be, I don't know how you'll be funding the program. We fund through 11 different purveyors, and the county takes half the cost.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, this year and last year, we shut down Kachuma, mainly due to Whittier Fire and Thomas. So, therefore, the cost of the airplane was unreasonable to split between, say, a northern zone, so we work with just ground sites. And so it kind of varies that way. Another good thing about ground sites that we like, say, South County, North County have different ideas on how they want to seed, so we can split it up by maybe having a longer program for Twitchell and a shorter program for Kachuma. So we're kind of working with a larger group with different ideas.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
Each year. Yeah.
So if you had to choose one, it would be the air.
Air is definitely more accurate.
Yeah,
that's what I read. Exactly where you want to put the material.
Yep.
Okay. Did that generate any more questions from anybody?
Actually, not specifically that, but actually, Ms. Gibson's questions earlier actually generated a question for Jill. And possibly Christy. So, and it has specifically to do with the financing of the program. So if we were going full bore this year, I see a $300,000 budget coming from deferral of projects. So if we don't successfully get the program up and running during this rainy season, we're not anticipating to defer any projects, but we would build it into next year's budget, and that would be where the deferral would be. Or if we do, let's say January comes, board approves it, Ray works with Santa Barbara County, and they say, sure, let's start next week. What projects are we going to defer?
So, Christy, we thought of this as we were searching around with the anticipation that we might want to do this project this year. So we looked through the budget to find $300,000, and we part of this we've discussed with TAC, but the first one was pigging. Pigging has been on our books for many years, and we've over time the money in pigging was kind of used for shortfalls on other projects. So at the moment, sitting in the pigging account is $89,000. We've had this conversation many times at TAC that it's just not, at this point in time, it's not needed because the pigging was for purposes of increasing capacity in the first segment of the pipeline. And the demand for water is lower right now and because of the drought, so we don't see that being a need at this time. So we could definitely put all the money that's in pigging this year into this program. The fault zone at the left dam abutment, we put approximately $180,000 in that for 18-19, but we did a study for maybe $40,000, so we have money left in that, and we're actually trying to decide the priority of fixing that problem. It doesn't seem like it's a health and safety issue for us. It's maybe some other issue that we need to decide. So we're comfortable deferring that till possibly next year. So that would free up about $150,000 this year. Also on the books, left over from the drought, was something called dam intake assessment. At some point when the lake was very low, we thought that we might want to be able to know if the lowest intake structure was good. Well, we found a cheaper way to figure that out, and we had divers go down there. They came back with the results were fine. So we actually had $20,000 left, but because I wasn't sure if we were going to be going back down that direction in terms of the reservoir level, I left it on the books, but I think I'm comfortable at this point we could, you know, use that money for this. As well as this was the spill prevention valve replacement was a project that we had that the operators thought they wanted, and then after further investigation, they determined it wasn't needed. So that's $40,000 there. And that's how we got up to $300,000.
Okay.
So going forward, if you don't do it this year, then we would budget for it next year.
Okay, great. So notwithstanding the horrible pun that if we do move forward with this, the first place to start is with pigs flying.
Yes. When pigs fly.
Very good. We like that one.
And that's okay. That's
thanks,
all I have.
Jeff. Yeah.
Maybe just one Brad. More.
Uh-huh.
We actually couldn't spend $300,000 this year if we started in January anyway. I mean, because we've got $30,000, what was it, fixed costs, $30,000 a month. I mean, we're not going to, unless we have storms into May or June, which would be great. But there's adequate funding. I think that's probably the way I'm looking at this.
Yeah. I think our critical path is timing. Yeah. To be honest, I'm not sure we can make it, but we will give it a shot, as Ray said.
Okay. Any other questions? Marcia.
Ray, would you be open to doing a test, doing some testing just to, I know that it has been stated the type of silver iodide doesn't, but I've read studies that with the new testing that says otherwise in certain areas. And it could be, you know, they take the base sample and then they test before and after. Actually, one area tested every month. And there has shown accumulations from 10 to 450, and they say mg, whatever that is. But it's a very, very small measurement, but more than what was there when they started. So because of the toxicity, it is on the CDC's list of this very toxic substance. It would make me feel more comfortable because of the new testing, but I don't know the cost. Now, it's not going to change my vote, but it would really make me more comfortable with this based on what I've read. Is that something that you would be willing to maybe put in a report when it goes before the board, or?
So when you take this to the board, the board's going to have to weigh all this as mm-hmm. well. They're going to probably have a lot of the same questions you had. And on top of that, it's a public meeting, so anybody that has any questions or concerns about the mitigated negative deck, and there may be many people who feel the same way as you do, like, not sure, is this really that safe? I think that will come out, actually, in the meeting. Mm-hmm. At the public hearing is when we may have to say, okay, we will amend the mitigated negative deck to include monitoring. That's one way we can possibly address your concerns. That's sort of putting it off to the Board of Supervisors, but I talked to our Environmental Division resource specialist who prepared that, and I think we can amend it if we wanted to include more testing.
Yeah, I thought it was unfair to kind of spring this on everybody because the cost might be cost prohibitive. You know, I was just wondering if I can always write a letter if I can't go either. So, you know, just so
maybe we can look up those costs so that we have them ready.
That'd be great.
Because it's very likely that, you know, your question may come up again in that public setting. But I did just want to mention one thing. If you all do decide to go forward with this, as Ray said, it's very critical that you all reach out to the Board of Supervisors because this is entirely funded by you, but they also have the same concerns. You know, the mitigated negative deck is actually for both Lopez and Salinas. So while it doesn't seem like maybe the supervisors in the North County are going to have a concern when Zone 3 is going to pay for it. It's going to happen over Lopez Reservoir. You know, at some future date, that mitigated negative deck could be pointed to, and somebody could say, let's do a cloud seeding in there. It would be all ready. So we have to anticipate that, you know, basically all the supervisors need to understand, you know, that you really want it and that it's, you know, high priority or however you want to. But the outreach by you all is going to be what's critical.
So question to kind of piggyback on Ms. Guthrie's question, and I don't know if this is for Matthew or for who, but realizing that she's referencing soil sampling, so does not the county's water quality lab already do water sampling in the lake, and would there be any benefit to doing the silver iodide testing of the water to see if there's anything in the water, which then goes into, do we then test samples? I mean, something we're already doing at the lake anyway, to see if there's an addition to that
sample,
which satisfies potentially.
No, because the reports that I read, they said they take a base sample before you start spraying inside the area and well outside, because, you know, we all know it can go into other areas unintentionally, just for a base sample, so you know what's occurring there naturally. And then after, depending on what you have set up, but let's just say before we do a before and after, then after the spraying, then the measurement would occur again in the exact same areas to see if there was elevated soil and waterways, see if it was elevated. And when that's done, it has shown, if it's done on a regular basis, right, on it, like if you do it once, we have clouds coming in once a week and we're spraying, you know, spraying once isn't going to do it if we just do a, you know,
okay. I guess I was just trying to see if we could do piggyback on some sampling we were already doing for water quality to see if it does show up, then we have a different conversation of yes, we need to satisfy testing, but maybe that's the water quality testing would be a way to say it's clean, mm-hmm. both before and after.
Yeah.
So that's where I was going with that suggestion.
Yeah, I think from a they definitely take samples of the water. If you're concerned about soils, I'm fairly certain that's not part of what they do. So that might be additional.
I was just trying to determine a way to potentially test for it without going through a significantly different program.
Yeah, each flare that's lit only releases about 16 grams of silver iodide, and you know, that's the physical weight of how much is being released, you know, dispersed over a watershed of 100 square miles. The math would even show that it would be minimal. You wouldn't even be able to detect that. So even if you compare it with background levels. So.
Yeah, these testing were done for accumulated impacts. Yeah. Not one-time spray.
Yeah, and that's why, like, even that study, the Sacramento the Water District there, mm-hmm. They did it over a period of 30 years, and so anyway.
So if we didn't do it this coming year, we could perhaps start the next year and get a baseline amount. In other words, we wouldn't have to start this year, would we?
No, we wouldn't.
We would have to get a baseline amount at some point, and the amount that you release the first year couldn't possibly do anything significant, so the...
Yeah, I mean, that's reasonable, yeah.
Yeah. So we could decide how much it would cost and get a baseline sample and analysis next year and move forward at that time.
Actually, I wouldn't mind getting a baseline sample this year. And then as we start spraying, maybe wait a few years and then see if we have any kind of accumulation if we continue the program. But it's best to start before... Right before we do any spraying, so it's a quality baseline, right? If you're already spraying, then we don't know if something's detected. It could be occurring, you know. It could already be there. So, or you always have small amounts will show up on the test because it occurs naturally in some rocks and soil. And so, from what I've read, and I'm not a chemist either, but so they said before you start, it's good to take a baseline so you know what's occurring naturally. And then you could determine when accumulation after a few years. I don't know. I'll have to do more research on that.
Maybe the discussion there becomes, and I realize we may still have public comment to receive from everybody in the audience. If we do proceed forward with this, perhaps we direct staff to come back with a cost to do some baseline testing prior to commencing the program, because it sounds like there's going to be some ramp up. At that point.
That sounds like a good idea. So, further questions? Anybody generate anything else? So, I think we're looking for a motion to support approval of the mitigated negative deck and a motion to pursue aircraft seating.
Do we need public comment?
Oh, well, we can get public comment if there is any. Do we have any public? Shane, you haven't said anything.
No, I have no comment.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. So we've got that then. So looking for a motion.
So with that in mind, I'll go ahead and make a recommendation that the Zone 3 Advisory Committee vote to pursue a cloud seeding program for the winter of 18-19, considering an aircraft only for 5-month period with a contingent upon board approval and certification of the mitigated neg deck.
Second.
So I guess, is there any further discussion for the vote?
So just the discussion as far as would we do another motion for another item regarding if we want to do the monitoring, a cost for the monitoring, come back to the board?
And I guess I didn't see that as a need for a motion per se, just kind of direction to staff.
Okay.
Would be where I would go with that.
Okay. Thank you.
Run it through the TAC.
Right. Yes, through the TAC.
Okay, so I guess we're looking for a roll call vote.
Member Lee?
Yes.
Member Hageman?
Yes.
Chairman Gehring?
Yes.
Member Gibson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Barnidge?
Yes.
And Member Guthrie?
Yes.
Member Talley?
Yes.
Okay.
And with the understanding that we're providing direction to staff to pursue baseline testing costs and scope with discussion at the TAC level prior to coming to us.
Great. And that should show in the minutes. Okay. So do we have any committee member comments?
Again, we'd just like to thank staff and Matthew for coming up and smartening us up on this whole concept. It's been fascinating reading and appreciate that information.
Anyone else?
Nope.
I'm not seeing any. I think we are adjourned in that case. Thank you. Good. Thanks for coming, Matthew. Thank you.